Walker against Barnhart is our next case for argument this morning. Mr. Jenner.
William Jenner for the plaintiff, Diane Walker. May it please the court. The district court in this case acknowledged that the claimant had a long employment history and an excellent record of attendance. In fact, she had even gone for a stretch of 5 years with absolutely perfect attendance. She was initially diagnosed by her treating physician, Dr. Voorhees, with fibromyalgia on February 7, 2001. And she continued to work with pain until July of 2001, filing her application for disability in August of that year. The Federal District Court says that in assessing fibromyalgia and pain cases, the ALJ is essentially assessing Mrs. Walker's credibility. And I would agree, but I would submit that in making credibility assessments in pain or fibromyalgia cases, SSR 96-7P is mandatory and binding on all ALJs at the administrative level. SSR 96-7P lists seven factors, and I quote here, that the adjudicator must consider in addition to the objective medical evidence. The district court decision in this case correctly states that an ALJ cannot discount counsel complaints of pain because they are not supported by objective medical evidence. Then the district court cites Knight v. Chater in this case, and Knight again lists the seven factors that must be considered. The district court then cites the Seventh Circuit case of Steele versus Barnhart. And in that case, the ALJ's explanation was held insufficient where the ALJ had written, quote, the claimant's subjective complaints and alleged limitations were considered under the criteria of SSR 96-7P and found credible only to the extent of precluding work in excess of the light level. Now, if we go to the record here, record page 16, the ALJ's decision here sounds very similar. The ALJ here says the undersigned has considered the complaints, the claimant's subjective complaints and testimony according to the guidelines set out in SSR 96-7P and concludes that it is credible to the extent that she can't be on her feet for long periods of time or lift heavy weights. Almost the same language. This is the only reference in the decision of the ALJ that refers to 96-7P. The ALJ did not discuss, as required by 96-7P, the duration or frequency of the pain of the claimant, the factors that bring on or aggravate the pain, or the dosage or effectiveness, at least, of the medication she was taking. More importantly, the ALJ does not discuss what weight was given to the factors which would cause him to reject her credibility. After all, when a claimant testifies, they are under oath. They are presumed to be telling the truth. So the ALJ, to discount that credibility, must find reasons why it is not credible. That's true in any legal case that we have. All the ALJ really does in this case is take some pot shots at credibility. For example, on the record page 14, he points out that Dr. Voorhees, the treating physician, on February 7, 2001, released her to go back to work. Well, that's true, but she did go back to work, and she worked until July of that year before the pain got to the point where she couldn't work. The ALJ notes that the claimant formerly weighed 110 pounds. That was apparently her normal weight. There was a thing of the record in 1998. She weighed under 130 pounds. She now weighs 190 pounds, but he does not discuss the significance of that. The ALJ says that except for her chiropractor, treating physicians did not fill out forms saying she was disabled. But the ALJ did not request such forms. 96-7P, page 3, says when additional information is needed, the adjudicator must make every reasonable effort to obtain that available information. The ALJ makes no mention of the significance of the longitudinal medical history in this case, where the claimant sought regular treatment to seek relief from her pain. SSR 96-7P says that lends great credence to and great support to the individual's allegations of pain. And in this case, it did also. And I think the government argued in their brief that her failure to follow up with a specialist for 1 year undermined those allegations. But again, 96-7P says the adjudicator must not draw any inference from a failure to pursue medical treatment without first considering any explanations that the individual may provide. None were requested by the ALJ. I think, in summary, Your Honor, that we all recognize that these pain cases are extremely difficult. I read the recent case of Carradine in this court in which Judge Ripple was one of the judges. It generated a 20-page dissent by Judge Coffey. And I think the reason they're difficult...
The personalities involved do not matter to our jurisprudence. The decisions are what they are.
Oh, I agree. But I mean, what I mean is I think these cases have been difficult. Sarchet has been another difficult case, which I think perhaps Your Honor was involved in. I think
it makes no difference whether I was on a particular panel or whether Judge Coffey was on a different panel.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor. I understand that. My only point is the reason pain cases are so difficult is because pain is subjective. There is no objective way to measure it. That's true in fibromyalgia cases, so it comes down to credibility. I feel that the reviewing court, the job of the reviewing courts will be made much less difficult if the actual factors required by the regulation are specifically discussed in the ALJ's decision in some organized manner. And again, 96.7P says it's not enough to simply recite the factors. The decision must discuss specific reasons to make clear to the individual and to the reviewing court the weight to each piece of evidence and the factors that they must consider. In this case, there was actually no substantial impeachment of the credibility of this claimant with a long and excellent employment history. She had a diagnosis of the disease. It was backed up by trigger points, and the treatment was consistent and regular. Her medicines were consistent with the disease process. They were altered, increased. She tried physical therapy, exercise, home therapy, massages, chiropractors in attempts to alleviate her pain, and I feel that the ALJ did not defeat her credibility. If there was impeachment of credibility, the decision does not make clear to the individual or to this reviewing court the factors that were used to discredit the claimant and the weight given to those factors. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Jenner. Mr. Skidmore.
May it please the Court, David Skidmore for the Commissioner of Social Security. I think the most significant feature of this case is that there is no dispute here about the sufficiency of the evidence. In other words, there's no argument here today or in Ms. Walker's brief that the evidence does not support the ALJ's decision. Their argument is that the ALJ's discussion of the evidence was insufficient to permit a reviewing court to discern the basis of the basis for the administrative decision. Now, the standard is not, as counsel has suggested here today, did the ALJ mechanically recite each and every factor in the Social Security ruling. The standard is, did the ALJ consider the important evidence? Did he provide specific, credible reasons for his finding that the claimant's complaints weren't fully credible? The ALJ did that here. The ALJ discussed the objective medical evidence. He also noted the unique features of fibromyalgia, which is that objective evidence does not typically give any information about the severity of the condition. But he also observed that there has to be some evidence that the condition caused functional limitations. Dr. Voorhees, the claimant's primary treating physician, indicated in February 2001 when he diagnosed fibromyalgia that she could return to work. At that time, she was performing a job that required her to lift up to 40 pounds and to do significant standing and walking throughout the day. It was a job working for a manufacturer of hospital beds. It was relatively physically demanding work. She did subsequently stop working in July 2001 when she applied for disability benefits. At that time, immediately after she applied for benefits, Dr. Voorhees observed that Ms. Walker's back pain, back and neck pain were stable. She had no weakness. So there's no evidence of any precipitous worsening of her condition. Now, ultimately, the ALJ did credit her complaints. He ultimately found that she could only perform sedentary work, which is relatively, compared to her past work, is not terribly strenuous. It requires lifting up to 10 pounds on occasion and sitting throughout most of the day. The ALJ also considered the treating source statements and opinions of the state agency doctors, who indicated that she could perform, after reviewing all of this evidence, the treatment evidence from Dr. Calavadoris and Dr. Voorhees, they opined that she could perform light work. He also discussed the treatment history. The council has discussed several of the factors in 96-7P, the seven factors, and he, in his brief, he really didn't make any arguments at all about exactly what the ALJ failed to do. The fact is the ALJ did discuss the effectiveness of her medications. He cited Dr. Calavadoris' comment that she responded well to her pain medications. He discussed her treatment history, the fact that, for example, that Dr. Calavadoris saw her in May of 2001, made several treatment recommendations, but there's no evidence that she complied with any of these treatment recommendations. One of them was that he come back and see her in 3 months. Ms. Walker didn't go back and see him for another year. And most of the treatment after the time she claimed she became disabled in July 2001, she saw her treating physician 6 times. Several of those visits were for routine medical conditions. She had conjunctivitis. One of the visits was related to complaints about a shoulder impairment that the medical record reflects resolved a few months later. She also was complaining of heart palpitations at one point, and she had a cardiac workup, which was negative, and her doctor recommended that she reduce her caffeine intake. So there's no question that she had significant functional limitations. But on this record, on substantial evidence review, it's clear, it's the commissioner's position, it's clear that the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence. It's clear that the ALJ did discuss the relevant evidence. He discussed the inconsistencies between her various allegations and what was in the medical evidence. He discussed her response to medications. He discussed her treatment other than medications, including the fact that she did some physical therapy and she underwent some chiropractic treatment, which Ms. Walker testified that chiropractic treatment helped resolve her shoulder problems. He also discussed her daily activities. And ultimately, the ALJ found that she was limited to sedentary work. Now, as we outlined in our brief, the ALJ's decision shows that he followed the analytical framework outlined in the commissioner's regulations and rulings and outlined by this court in its case law. The decision was thorough and well articulated, and accordingly I would urge this court to affirm the district court's decision. And if you have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Anything further, Mr. Jenner?
Yes, just leave me. I feel that the record does show a longitudinal medical treatment history here. She saw that specialist on May 24, 2001. She was still working. He diagnosed fibromyalgia through trigger points. He also took x-rays, which were suggestive of muscle spasms. And significantly, he continued the Elavil and Lodine that her treating physician had given her. On May 6, she saw the treating physician. Again, she found the trigger points. He increased the Elavil. He started Zoloft, and he continued Lodine. On July 1st, he said he would be happy to fill out paperwork if she proceeds, I assume, with a disability application. He started her on Neurontin and increased the Zoloft. On November 1st, he saw her and said, I will manage her fibromyalgia as a treating physician. At that time, he gave her 5 refills of Zoloft. In December 1st, she did come in for conjunctivitis, but the treating notes noted the history of fibromyalgia. He continued the medications, Lodine, Zoloft, and Neurontin, and started Flexeril. Now, none of those are eye medications. So I think when she was seen, maybe she had a problem, an eye problem, but she was also treating for the other. She saw him again on February 2nd. March 2nd, pain medications were all continued, changed, or increased. And then on May 14th, 2002, she saw the specialist again, he added Darvocet to the medical regime and reiterated his statement that she had fibromyalgia. I feel that there is no way, the way this court, the ALJ, wrote this decision, for us to determine what of those seven factors he used to impeach her credibility. I don't think he effectively impeached her credibility, and without following the mandates of SSR 96-7P, I don't think they can, in a meaningful way that the reviewing court can review, I don't think it's a fair way to impeach credibility of a witness sworn to tell the truth.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.